things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that love you so much that it's been passed down to their own talk about. And then so much of the history we have is because we're fantastic enough that we
Doge.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We're pumped to be with you. It is beautiful in Youngstown, and I have not gotten to enjoy it yet. I've had a couple of meetings and a Zoom call and a bunch of that fun stuff, and now we're here in the studio doing this, and then I'm going to enjoy it.
All right.
Are you going to be able to enjoy the 70 degrees
sure
and sunshine?
Heck yeah. Probably do some outside yard work, cleaning, you know. That's what we do as adults.
Adulting. Yeah, that's so true. It's interesting. I was having this conversation with somebody on the phone today, and I think back to, you know, quote unquote, simpler times. And you remember, like, as a kid, like, you never thought about springtime or summer. Like, you were just pumped to be outside and go and get on your bike and hang out with your friends. And then you get a little older and, you know, Sam and I got married and, you know, we enjoyed that time, but I look back at that like, man, we could have taken so much more advantage of not having kids. And now that we have kids, we're like, can we get away? And how do we do that? And it's just different. And every season has its blessings for sure. But yeah, it was just a funny conversation thinking about the nice weather. Man, wouldn't it be nice if, well, yeah, you know, in high school or college, I could have just picked up and went. But
that's right.
You know, now you got responsibilities and
the big R word.
Yeah, that's so good. So anything exciting going on in Joe's world?
No, this is where like the organization and the planning and all of the responsibilities on, you know, the administrative side make it all even possible. Because when things start all hitting at the same time, if it weren't for spreadsheets, I would be a blubbering mess right now. So I'm thankful that we got good roots.
Yeah. How did our last episode do on Law of Attraction? I thought it was one of
the best ever. And no, I got in-person feedback, people who listened to the show who like vicariously lived the Law of Attraction through you and I. They had lots of questions about what we talked about. So we sparked some debate. We sparked some interest.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, me too.
Anything particular that you remember off the top of your head?
Overall, like you kind of nail it when people invest in sort of the mysticism of it. Mm-hmm. And when we start breaking it down and adding like real mechanics to it, mm-hmm. then it kind of suspends that. And then people start finding themselves doing it. I had a long conversation that had to do with that language side where, you know, when you're single dimensional thinking, it's a binary choice, right?
Correct.
It's like, I can't do this. It's absolutely can't be done right now, and I'm certain of it. And then you have Joe that says, okay, well, it can't be done right now. I get it, because there's four other things that are necessary. So then when you start assembling the four things that are necessary that leads to it, then you watch that one unlock. It's like a magical day.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, it's interesting. I've mentioned multiple times, I think the language around Law of Attraction stuff, when it's crafted in a different way, particularly people of faith that I deal with, they're really turned off by the mysticism, the new agey kind of feel to a lot of it. But then when I'm like, yeah, but Jesus said this, and they're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, some of the books say it this way in Law of Attraction, but what they really mean is this. And to help people navigate some of those things, because, you know, over and over in the scriptures, you see it's done to you according to your faith. And that kind of phraseology, you know, people are healed. And Jesus says, well, it's been done to you according to your faith. And you think about that and you're like, wow, like, you know, you would categorize that and go, oh, that doesn't seem accurate. Like it had to have been the power of God. Well, it was, but being acted on by your faith.
Right.
And so that's where people get hung up, and then it turns into a binary equation, and they go, oh, that's just hocus pocus, and we just throw it off to the side. But in reality,
I love those challenges, because my strongest form of faith is when I poke it in and see what mm-hmm. happens to it. I try to poke holes into it, and if it comes back as truth after I've poked at it, I believe in it a little bit more, rather than, you know, having dogma, which is stuff that cannot be challenged. You just accept as a reality. And then those people get super nervous when you say, hey, I want to explore it. That sounds pretty good over here. Let me explore to see the ups and the downs of that part.
Yeah, absolutely. Any new shows in Joe's world? Any new, if you caught anything on Netflix or?
I'm still doing Yellowstone. Okay. I started Reacher.
We started that as well.
Yeah.
It's a little like, it's like an action movie meets Hallmark. Like it's a little,
yeah, right.
It's a little weird.
Putting it, right.
Cause he's kind of not quite believable, but and it seems like everything's going to get put together with like a nice bow on it and stuff. And, you know, you're just waiting for the, you know, the girl in a flannel to return to her hometown and fall in love with them. Like, that's
right. But my family thinks that I am a lot like Reacher, you know, void of an emotional deal, disconnected with whatever.
Yeah.
Got the bottom, sure. But
come on. And we've watched over the years the Last Kingdom. I don't know if you've watched any of that. It's like a historical piece, shocker for me. But it deals with the Danes and the Saxons and all of that, and follows this kind of main character. It's a show we really loved. And the last episode that we saw was like right at the beginning of the pandemic, and then they didn't record, and so they're just releasing season five like 2 years later. So my wife and I were like, we need to watch like a recap, like. We had to remember who was who and who was
2 years ago. That's a forever.
Right. And so we watched a little bit of recap last night, and then the first episode of the new season. It was quite good. So
we have a habit of getting totally into a series and then just never watching how it ends. Like, we just fall out of love and it goes on too long, and I never go back and figure out how the last episode was spent.
It's interesting because I bet a lot of shows spend so much time trying to convince people to watch it in the beginning, and then the shows that are really good have that arc to them. But a lot of shows don't finish well. Like, everybody complains about how Game of Thrones ended or how this show ended. They're like, it was lame. And it almost, to some extent, didn't matter how they finished. Some of those shows were so well written, or they had so much emotional investment. If you finish this way or this way, you're going to, you know, really upset.
The one show that I just wanted to murder someone after was Lost.
So
the worst.
That was one ending. Of Sam and my first show that we watched on Netflix, worst. Or one of those. And I got to about season three, and as soon as it got like super weird sci-fi, like I was into like, oh, the plane went down and they're all here. And then as soon as it got weird and sci-fi and there was a bunker and people watching cameras, I was like, nah. And my wife finished it. I never finished it.
I'm not going to spoil it for you in case you ever go back here.
But I know how it ends.
We watch like from season to season that there were a lot of writers that changed on that show. And it's almost like the next writer sort of like made it theirs, but made it go off on such a new branch out there that it got disconnected from the overall trunk. And I think that by the third or fourth writer, they just went way off into left field.
Yeah. It's tough when you don't have that continuity. I think people made the same complaint about Game of Thrones and a couple of those others when they switched directors or writers. It changed things. Even you see that with like a series of movies, like the Batman movies and the Matrix movies and stuff. When, you know, certain people are replaced, it just doesn't have the same pop as it would otherwise.
Can I complain at you for a minute?
Sure.
I want to get this off my chest.
Yeah.
I am so sick of being lectured by movies and television shows.
Yeah.
I freaking hate it so bad. Like, the first instance was I went to a zoo and I walked in and they were doing a bird show. And we sat in the thing thinking that we were going to learn about birds. And there was like 10 minutes dissertation about how human beings are terrible and we're destroying the everything. Earth. I wanted to leave the zoo like right then, because I was like, I just paid money to be lectured from some idiot, right? And same things happen with TV. Like, you always find those nuggets that they sneak in for some cultural, you know, kind of activism.
Yep.
And I want to turn off the show. I do.
1,000% yes. So my wife is a longtime Survivor watcher, and I've been really turned off the last couple seasons. So the beginning, it was all about the game. You had to figure out how to survive. You know, people were surviving on like a quarter cup of rice a day. And like there was that element of it. And then there was the game element, and it's progressed and now has become it's becoming more the social side is being pushed. And so they're hitting certain political agendas, or they're hitting certain cultural twists or sexual agendas or whatever. And this first episode of last season, there's actually a point where I had to pause it. And I was like, because our kids love it. And I was like, they're not watching this garbage. And I took them out of the room when that portion was done. I brought them back in. But it's like, 5 years ago, that wouldn't have been an issue, because it was just about the game. And it was about, you know, the people were fun and they developed the stories of the people behind. But it's almost like they're intentionally seeding certain things to push a certain agenda. And that's super frustrating. It's not just Survivor. It's all over the place anymore. And it's like, just entertain me.
That's right.
Don't
lecture me. And that's what happened with NFL and all of the sports arenas buying into those social activism deal where, I mean, I could have respect that somebody has the right to try to, you know, bring whatever thing awareness to whatever sure. they believe in, but to cram it down your throat and make you feel like a bad person and lecture you, that's where they
lose me. Every episode, everything. It's become an agenda point, and it's almost for some networks and stuff like that. Like, they've made a decision that they're going to, you know, one up everything else. And it's become this, you know, and it's frustrating. And then on the other side, you have the anti all of that. You know, I love what, you know, some of these underground kind of networks are doing. Some are becoming more prominent. We're like, that's fine. Disney wants to fire that person. We'll hire them. You know, I think of Daily Wire doing, you know, they've released a couple of movies. They have a movie coming out with Gina Carano because Disney fired her because she had a, posted a tweet about a disagreement she had politically, and they fired her over it. And he was like, called her up and was like, we'll hire you. And she's making a movie and it's going to be awesome. And, you know, you look at that stuff and it's just, some of that is, yes, as a business, they have every right to do what they want to do. They can push whatever agenda, they can give to whatever they want. But for me, it's like, I don't want to, like, I loved watching ESPN growing up. But I would never turn ESPN on now because every other thing is like, oh, well, this happened and this thing's being pushed and China and racial agenda and all this stuff. And you're like, can't we just see the highlights? I want to know how many three-pointers he had, or I want to, you know, how many touchdowns, or Tom Brady's back or he's out. Like, that's the stuff that people care about. And,
but, you know, they, when
and
they,
it turns you off to it.
Right. And then what happens when ratings go down, they're literally confused about why. I mean, we alienated half of our audience and they left and now we have no viewers. What do we do now? Like, my recommendation is that, you know, subtlety is your friend.
Yep.
Right. Make your communications happen, but let us enjoy what we came for. It's almost like when you go to a place and you get baited and switched, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
While you're here and we have this audience, let me punch you in the face with a pie, that kind of a thing.
Yep. Absolutely. It's the same thing, you know, as a pastor, you know, we deal with this, right? So obviously I have certain political convictions and things that I think are true and good and important. The church has certain positions that it takes on issues that are very biblical. But if I make every sermon a stump speech for a particular political issue, people are like, get the heck out of here. Like,
and why? They should.
Or
absolutely.
If I get in there and it gets inserted into everything, people are going to be like, oh my gosh, here goes pastor again on his soapbox. And people just get tired of it. Right. And it's not that you don't address the important issues, but like you're saying, it's how you do it. And it's the ability to be able to do it in a way that is, you know, not just authentic, but in a way where it's not, preachy is probably the best way to describe it. Like, I'm not here to cram this down your throat. You may not, but it, unfortunately it is.
Part of the law of attraction is that you can either persuade or you can coerce, right? And when you get lectury and preachy, you're trying to use emotional leverage to get somebody to feel or do something different. Mm. Persuasion feels a little bit different, where you paint the picture of the good that comes from feeling a certain way, and you give people the choice to either choose or not. The less choice you give them, the more likely they're going to come to your side anyway. So all it is a bunch of posturing for a bunch of people who are postured in the same direction, and everybody else runs away. If you want to do that, you're just going to have a tribe over there and tribe over there, and they're going to preach to each other.
Yeah, exactly. And you end up in an echo chamber.
Absolutely.
And it's polarized. I had a conversation with somebody last weekend. It was one of the parents of Graham's friend. And, you know, we were chatting about a couple things and, you know, picked up a little bit on some of his, you know, kind of political sense in the way that he's plugged in. And I was like, you know, I could sit here and we could have a whole argument about stuff maybe we don't agree on. But we talked about three or four things. I'm like, oh, that's really cool that you do that. How could we be a part of that? You know, is there some sort of cross-pollination of this? We probably don't vote the same way. We probably don't see the world the same way. But, man, we need to have more conversations like that. Which brings me to an interesting thought. Did you watch the Sunday special? Ben Shapiro interviewed Bill Maher.
I did.
It was fantastic.
It was, too.
I don't agree with Bill Maher 80% of the time. But I was like, this was so refreshing and so nice. Like, they disagreed on some things and they agreed on some things, and they actually agreed on a few things that they probably thought they would disagree on. And they had a conversation, and I thought Bill did a great job of just, you know, he brings humor and brevity to a lot of stuff, and he's pretty funny.
What I noticed too is there's some stuff that Bill Maher would have said on his show that would have been like a dot, 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 applause line and move on. But since Ben was there to counter it, it like kind of like, I don't know, governed him down a little bit, and it made the show even better.
Yeah.
It's what I used to love about Hannity and Combs, because you couldn't say bullshit without it being responded to like now.
Yep. 100%. And I love that discourse. So it was really fun. And on the show, I guess Bill Maher's doing a podcast where they get people on with different points of view, and they just have a conversation about not politics, just about life. And he invited Ben on his show. So I'm so going to listen to that. You know, I have a ton of respect for principled individuals. Even if I disagree with some of Bill's principles, he has the principle of free speech. And just like across the board, some tried and true American principles. We may see some things differently. We may see some data differently. But I just so appreciate someone that's willing to come to the table and say, here are my principles. We're not going to agree on some things, but we can be friends. I love that.
Yeah. And there aren't too many of those out there. Like when you see political discussions between people on like social media, these are people that have just agreed right down the one side or right down the other side. And you really cannot volley something that will have a discussion between them at all. It will just be the point counterpoint that you've heard a million times.
Exactly. I love what he said during that interview. Bill Maher said, you know, you're on social media arguing with someone you went to chem lab with in high school about who's on the Supreme Court. It's like, nobody did that before. Like he talked about his parents. He didn't talk about, you know, politics and stuff like that. It just, you know, it was considered rude. You know, you were there to learn about their kids or play on the baseball team or have lunch together. It's a different culture, and everything is so, we have to have an opinion on that. And if you don't have an opinion on that, you're an evil, bad person. That's like one of my favorite answers as pastor. Sometimes people come like, pastor, what do you think about? I don't know. And they're like, what do you mean? You don't know? I'm like, I don't know. I'm going to see how that plays out. I have a feeling the way it's going to go, but I'm not sure.
Hmm.
And they're like, you can do that. You know, it's like, I'm like, yeah, I don't know is an acceptable answer.
Yeah.
So,
and I've been kind of tracking, like I pay attention to a lot of different polarizing groups, and there's some groups that, you know, when they get the pitchforks and torches out, they light somebody up and they look to destroy them. And then some people are impervious of those groups. And I'm trying to figure out like, what about one group makes them so like dead worthy, and the other one seems to get away with it a little bit better, and they're a little bit more, you know, a little slippery, if that's a word. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're allowed to make up words. We talk for a living. Yes. I often wonder, what is it going to take? I heard somebody say recently, Joe Rogan posted this, and it kind of was like that an MIT and Harvard professor, I'm sure you saw it on Instagram or his Twitter account, calculated that the end of the world would come in 2040, that we'd run out of whatever, and that Isaac Newton, I guess, predicted 2060, and he was putting all the points in. And I heard somebody recently say, we have like two or three more elections before we devolve into full-blown civil war. And they're being a little tongue-in-cheek, but I think reality is, unless we tell, you know, people, unless people come together, unless people have some conversations, I think the vast majority of the country is the 75 to 80% in the middle.
Yeah.
And it's being bounced like a, you know, game of pong back and forth between the two fringes. And it doesn't know where to land on some things because it's terrified of one side or the other, depending on industry, depending on how they were raised, et cetera.
So, but the math behind that actually is better. So if the world can't come together in some unifying decision, when the pendulum swings to the other side, it has the same disunity on the other side. So let's just say it got a unified proposition for something you didn't agree with. If everybody could just come together against that and there was nothing to stop it, that would be terrifying. But if you watch as you get more towards the extreme, you get separation and you get diffusing of that, you know, whatever, you can't come to an agreement. It's actually good, because if it's, you know, either side is going to have that differentiation.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because the more extreme people get, whether politically, you know, religiously, it doesn't matter what arena, as you get more polarized opposite sides of things, you end up forming, I hope and believe, a strong middle. I think you're seeing this with parents right now. So you have parents that are feeling pressed by extremes, whether that's they don't want some sort of indoctrination of their kids at a certain age with certain information, or whether they want more freedom and openness, whatever it is. And it's actually coalescing this group of people that voted differently, that are coming from different backgrounds, but they're like, you're messing with our kids. And it becomes a rallying point. So I don't know if that's coalescing the middle, but I'm finding a lot more parents that are like, yeah, I've been a Republican my whole life, but I would never vote for da 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 da. And I've been a Democrat my whole life, and I would never vote for that. You know what we agree on is this, right. and it's making this parents a voting block, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, even on policy too. Like when you get affected by a policy, not theoretically how it applies to someone else, it makes you question whether or not you really believe in that. Because it's easier to like vote a policy that goes against your enemy.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. Everybody. Oh yeah, you know, I remember the debate on the tax cuts, right? Everybody's like, oh, you know, this is going to be so good, and you have the propaganda being pushed that, hey, you have to support this or you have to be against it, you have both sides. But then when it played out for me personally, I got a little bit more because I have four kids. There were certain things that really played to my advantage, in that sense. But I have other friends that are in very similar structures in life that it actually was a disadvantage for them. Some of them in blue states had to all of a sudden, they didn't have their SALT deductions anymore. And so it really, you know, when it affects you personally, they were like, well, I hate this. You know, I voted for the guy, but I hate these tax cuts because of the way it affected me, because I live in New Jersey, New York, wherever. And now I'm paying so much more in taxes, where for me, I was like, well, I actually got more in the child tax credit, and some of these other things actually really helped me out. So it's interesting when you talk about the fact that when things affect you personally, it's just different.
So we got to the end of 1 year, and it was probably like 2014 or 2015. And we had a lopsided receivable cycles, which means that like right at the end of the year, people knew that they had some extra money to spend. So they spent a whole lot with us. So it created this big taxable event. So at the end of the year, I had to write a $40,000 check. I had about $70,000 sitting in the bank at the time. So $40,000 meant about half of what I had to go to the government. Now, because it was lopsided, in the beginning of this year, the following year, it was going to balance back out because it really was just weighted funky and it was going to wobble. But they didn't care. I still had to write that $40,000. It's not like they were going to give it back if that's. Yeah. So when I wrote that check, that was a painful check because that meant I had to not buy certain things and I had to move things around in my investment schedule in order to do that. So then when you watch the government frivolously spend that money when it gets to them, that cuts. Like they were serious about giving it to them and then they're throwing it around like it's confetti. And that pisses a business owner off because they don't understand the pain they create with their, the tax policies.
No, that's really, really true. How are you, what do you see, the Fed chose to raise the rates by 0.25%, which is interesting because they're talking about 10% inflation on some things. I think goods are like at 15%. It's just a very interesting, it seems like a real small drop in the bucket compared to what we will do. But do you think it's the right move? Do you not care? Does it not affect you?
There is no right move at this point.
Right.
I mean, literally, if they could go bounce back, raise, decline, raise, decline, raise, decline, and just stay right where you're at, pretend like you're doing something, have some moment. And because this inflation is going to be what just undoes everything. Think about like if you're losing 10% of your value on cash sitting there, what's going to happen? Yeah. You put it in anything. There's bubbles all around you. So you get one of those bubbles to pop right now. You get housing, you get student loans, you get anything popping right now in spite of this inflation, we're dead. So we need to just sit tight.
I thought housing was safe.
No,
they fix it?
I don't think so. I think it's bad.
I thought it was safe. That's funny. When I look at the sphere, I think the biggest thing, and you and I've talked about this years ago, is how do we get like a common sense political party or just a common sense, like independents are such a big group in the middle. And most people do not find themselves all the way on the right or all the way on the left. They find themselves in the middle just going, can someone with some intelligence, please, for the love of God, not waste my money and do something productive that's actually going to make society better. And what you get though is the caricatures on the far sides of either party. And there's gotta be a better way.
So I'm gonna give you my general answer whenever this question is asked in any department. Okay. So if somebody says, whether they're talking about charitable giving or feeding a family or building a house for whatever, you as an individual do not need the blessing of the infrastructure. right? So if you would just see what's wrong and you as an individual just start doing it, and if it's truly inspiring, if it's right, other people will follow you, and you don't have to like join the fray and join the political system and get somebody else's blessing. You just start doing it. Like, you get out and start moving towards it. You start giving stuff away. You might have the right permits, or you don't have a brick and mortar address, or you don't have, you know, tax status, right?
Right.
You just start doing what you believe in and people follow you.
No, that's good. It reminds me of the preacher I heard say, you know, he was praying one time and he asked God, he said, you know, Lord, you know, why are there so many people dying of starvation, so many poor people? And he prayed and prayed, and finally he felt like the Lord, you know, was ready to answer him. And the Lord said to him, you know, I would ask you the same question. And I love that kind of quip to it. And it stings a little bit, you know, because in some respects, you know, we look at these and we go, oh, you know, God, please intervene in these things. And he goes, I put you here, please do something about it. You know, like you're saying, see that need and fill it. Like, you know, you've done with that. How many pay it forward boxes are you up to?
Four of them. Yeah.
And you know, I know the one at the church, it's like I see people in and out, some people filling, some people taking. I love that. You know, it's just finding that spot and saying, hey, this is what we're going to do.
Can I ask you something? Like, this is not a disagreement. Don't take this insulting. But when especially in the church, I notice this a lot, that when you have those stinging messages that prey on a little bit of guilt and a little bit of shame, it kind of, I mean, it's probably effective as all can be, just like the, you know, government's getting you afraid, and then you're more apt to act on something if you're afraid. Yeah. In religion, if they point out some kind of contradiction in belief, you're more apt to go home and start doing something about it. But could there be like another way of using a positive version of that to inspire without inflicting that?
Yeah. So there's always a tension in your preaching to A, be true to the text, and B, to communicate in a way that's going to affect change. And so, you know, in some cases in the text, if you, depending on the slant you take on it, it can feel like it has the guilt and shame side of things. Guilt and shame motivate for a moment. People will run out and do stuff because, yeah, I feel bad, or, man, that's terrible, we should fix that. Or, but people do that across the board. Right. I mean, when you talk about, you know, the hurricane hits somewhere, and then all of a sudden, you know, people are raising thousands and thousands of dollars they weren't giving before.
Right.
But they feel guilty about, or they feel bad for. So for me, you talk about the positive way. You know, you can lead by fear or faith. And I think faith puts out the opportunities for compassion, the opportunities to do some of those things. Unfortunately, sometimes you can even frame it positively, and some people are still going to take it guilt and shame because that's what they've been programmed with. I know there have been times you'll hear me say, don't hear what I'm not saying,
right?
Because I'm trying to make a point, but I know half the room is going to feel guilty when I make this point. And it's so hard because, like, hey, I have to address this. And I know some of you are going to take this and it's going to motivate you for Monday and Tuesday because you feel guilty right now because I'm going to say it. And so I try and coat that in a way that pill is palatable and not taken as guilt, because guilt and shame don't last. They drive you to a place that is unhealthy most of the time.
Well, if the people that use that as a strategy were only the intellectuals, but if it's overused by everybody, the sensitivity goes when everywhere you go, someone's trying to make you feel guilty about something that you did to inspire you to do it. And it like gets muted out.
Yeah. But you know, marketers and some of these NGOs and different things like that, like, they know how to play that instrument all day long, and they do it really subtly and they do it really well. And some preachers do it very subtly and very well. So, you know, realistically, for us to be able to combat that, some of that's hardwiring. Some of that's now, you know, we get in a whole conversation about subconscious psyche of a community or of a nation. You know, they've been filtered things and given things, and don't think it's, you know, some people are like, oh, you know, I think for myself. And I've asked this question recently because there's plenty of evidence that the CIA and elsewhere have tried mind control stuff and have wanted to subtly put out a message. And there are ways to do that. We've done it in other countries.
Right.
Don't think for a second, that they would be above trying to do it here to drive something home. And marketers have tried to do it with different things to, you know, subliminally. I think I said to you a couple of shows ago, I saw a marketer that was talking about not to be suckered in by the word because. And the fact is that when it's been proven psychologically, Harvard, MIT, they did this whole thing that when people say they need to do that because, even if the reason's not good, when they say that word because, more people will allow them to do it just because they gave a reason.
Right.
And I find that so, it's a little yucky that, you know, people know that and they go, oh, we're going to use that. But it's the same way that marketers use certain color palettes because they know it's going to evoke certain emotions and it's going to trigger that subconscious part of your brain. And they know that you're going to be more open to a sale at that point,
right,
or a certain time of the day. You have certain chemicals going about, like, the studies behind that stuff is insane.
Yeah.
And they know how to play that human instrument.
But as soon as that pendulum goes where everybody's doing, it's minimized. And by doing, being different is what spotlights you. Mm-hmm. So it only works as long as not everybody's doing.
Correct.
It. So if everybody's lecturing you, then no one's really lecturing. You know, if you don't lecture, you're going to have more advantage over the lecturing. So.
Well, it's true. Like when you talk about, you and I've talked about this, when you talk about money, right? So most people are fear driven and they don't feel like they have enough. And so when you talk about money in a giving sense, when you talk about money when it comes to charity or even making a big purchase, my wife and I have this conversation a lot. Like, you know, she you know, wants like a $20 bill to go get a gallon of milk. And I'm like, you're going to be fine. Like, you know, just go get the gallon of milk. But well, maybe today she might need a $20 bill to get a gallon of milk. But my point being that, you know, some people are captivated in that space. And so when you talk to them about money, you know, the constant barrage and messaging to them is not authentic around that, particularly in the religious context. So I always try and come out of the gate with as much transparency and authenticity as I can, because everybody's assuming that I'm not transparent and I'm not authentic, because a whole litany of names I can give you that have swindled and embezzled and done all this stuff. And so I'm like, all right, I know those are the two cards everybody's holding, and they're going to go, yeah, we like you, Pastor Doug, but subconsciously they've been trained this way. So I have to go, here's the transparency, here's my authenticity, and then here's me personally. This is what we're going to do. If you don't participate, that's fine. And that's not a sales pitch, but it's a sales pitch.
It is.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I'm very honest and forthright,
but it's counter to the culture. It's exactly what you're saying. So everybody goes, you know, I love saying when we take up the offering sometimes at church, listen, if you don't want to give, please keep your money. God doesn't need it. The look sometimes that people are like, because they're so used to being asked and asked and asked. And when you say that, it's like, okay, I'm interested in what this guy's going to do. So to some extent, yes, it's true. But it's to go against that counterculture, if that makes sense.
It's not a parlor trick. You're taking a gauge for what is working. So for instance, let's just say the culture saying, you know, we use positive language, right? Mm-hmm. And so at a certain point, you know how to take a negative thing and convert it into its positive form. So you can be around a whole lot of negative people, hear what they're saying, mm-hmm. and use your ears to translate it up to what it should be.
Yeah. Well, when I first came to Bridge of Hope, I met with everybody in the church. It was, I don't know, 70 or 80 people. And I set these appointments and, you know, they came into the office and I said, tell me your story. Why are you here? What do you like about the church? What do you not like about the church? And it was so interesting because everybody that came in, first of all, I was like, am I the only person that wanted to move to Youngstown? Everybody's like, I'd love to live in Florida. I tried to move out of the state. And I remember saying to my wife one night, I'm like, I think we're the only ones that want to be here. And then the second thing that was super obvious was even when people talked about the stuff they liked, it was always cast in a negative light. It was like, well, we're not like this anymore, but we used to. And then they'd go into something that they liked about the church. Or when they talked about the negative. And so I was sitting there the whole time and I'm listening and I'm taking notes over a month or two. And I was able to take all that stuff and go, well, everybody talked about how they used to have this and they don't like how they don't have it anymore. That was their positive, you know? And I was like, but that's one of my goals. So I'm going to take that, flip it around, and then I'm going to sell it back to them as a positive affirmation of what we're going to do. And it was great because it was low hanging fruit. It was fruit that was rotting on the ground. And they're all going, that was really delicious 5 years ago. And I'm going, this, okay, this is what we're going to do. And everybody went, oh, he likes the fruit too. And I'm like, well, some of that is, you know, being observant. Some of that is good leadership. But some people use that to their advantage in a negative way. And I think when you're doing good with that, those things are important to know. I think marketing is super important, but some people make it sleazy and you don't like it. And so it's like, it's such a fine line. You and I talked about this when we were doing the Capitol campaign. It was one of my great hesitations in asking for money. I always caveated everything and I always hedged my bets and I went halfway with it. And you kept going like, yeah, but you're not going all the way with it. I'm like, yeah, but I kind of feel slimy and I don't want to do too much marketing. And you were like, just go for it. Like, this is, and I had to move past some of that stuff. But part of that is you're trying to gauge like, all right, is this manipulative? Is it coercive? Or am I actually persuading them that this is, you know, the way to go and allowing them a free choice, so to speak?
And if you adopt that everything is marketing, and then so when you're talking to just a regular person, you are marketing yourself and everything you care about to that person, then you can market other things just as easy as having a conversation with many people.
That's true.
There you go.
What you wear matters in that sense. How you carry yourself, all of that projects a certain image, and it's marketing.
There you go.
It's good. Well, thanks for listening, and I will see you next.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast.